You're listening to the best of Halford and Brough.
Whoa, wait a minute. Huh? Hold up. What? Oh, okay. Did we just lose the f***ing Canucks?
You're listening to Halford and Brough.
To the goal center in front, they score. Niels Höglander.
I thought he played great. I think that was the plan to let him get a lot of work tonight.
For a game that didn't mean much,
I was joking.
You have holidays in 2 days. Let's go.
I mean, the sport here in the KA market's been amazing, and we're glad to have playoff hockey back at Rogers.
Good morning, Vancouver 601 on a Wednesday. Happy Wednesday, everybody. It is Halford. It is Brough. It is Sportsnet 650. We are coming to you live from the Kintech Studios, beautiful Fairview Slopes in Vancouver. Jason, good morning.
Good morning.
A-Dog, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Laddie, good morning to you as well.
Hello, hello.
Halford and Brough of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience a Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. We are in hour one of the program. Hour one is brought to you by North Star Metal Recycling. Vancouver's premier metal recycler pays the highest prices on scrap metal. North Star Metal Recycling, they recycle, you get paid. You can visit them at 1170 Powell Street in Vancouver. Take it away, Jason.
We are coming to you live from the Kintech studio, Kintech Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sorfeet, what are you waiting for?
Kintech, that's what you're waiting for. We have a lot to get into on the show today. We are now one game away from the Vancouver Canucks ending their regular season and being on the way to the playoffs. Big win last night over the Calgary Flames. We have a lot to get into in terms of guests as well. Our guest list begins at 6:30. Jeff Merrick, host of the 32 Thoughts podcast and the Jeff Merrick Show, will join us. We know all the playoff matchups in the Eastern Conference. We don't know all of them in the West yet, but we'll get to all that with Jeff at 6:30. 7 o'clock, Luke Gazdick is going to join the program, former NHLer, now a Sportsnet NHL analyst. Same story there. We'll break down last night's game, Canucks-Flames 4-1 victory for the Canucks. We'll talk about the Eastern Conference playoffs, the Western Conference playoffs, everything that's going on as we get down to the short strokes of the NHL regular season. 8 o'clock, first-time guest on the program, Spence Checkets is going to join us from ESPN 700 Sports Radio in Utah.
Okay, Salt Lake City. Are they getting a team?
They are indeed. What was that accent? What was that? Was that a Salt Lake accent?
No, I was just thinking. Oh.
Some kind of accent.
So Spence Checkets is a sports radio host in Utah. His father is one of the more famous sports executives over the last few decades, Dave Checkets. He's a Utah guy. He used to own the St. Louis Blues. He was a high-ranking executive with the Knicks and Rangers as well. So Spence has a very interesting outlook on the National Hockey League going to Salt Lake City. So we'll talk to him at 8 o'clock. We are also giving away a $100 gift card to Bridge Brewing. Best What We Learned Today gets a $100 gift card for some delicious primetime beer from Bridge Brewing. Get them in now. Start early. Dunbar Lumber text line is 650-650. Hashtag it WWL. And put a beer emoji into your text. You will be entered into the grand prize contest for a $100 gift card to Bridge Brewing. Working in reverse on the guest list. 8 o'clock, it is Spence Checkets from Utah. 7 o'clock, Luke Gazdick. 6:30, Jeff Merrick. That's what's happening on the program today. Laddie, let's tell everybody what happened.
Hey, did you guys see the game last night?
No.
Oh, what happened?
I missed all the action because I was...
We know how busy your life can be.
What happened?
Missed it?
You missed that?
What?
What Happened is brought to you by the BC Construction Safety Alliance, making safety simpler by giving construction companies the best in tools, resources, and safety training. Visit them online at bccsa.ca. Thatcher Demko, in his return to the lineup, made 39 saves. The Vancouver Canucks clinched the Pacific Division for the first time in their history with a 4-1 win over the Calgary Flames at Rogers Arena on Tuesday night. Myers, goal and an assist. JT Miller, goal late. The Canucks now have points in four straight, and it's their first division title of any kind, Pacific or otherwise, since 2013. What a night at Rogers Arena.
I'm looking back on the Canucks seasons. I've got them all here, and they had that run where they won the Northwest like I don't know, like 7 of 8 years or whatever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there were times when they were the only good team in that division. And it was still impressive. They won back-to-back President's Trophies, went to the Stanley Cup Final. But since those days of winning the division, it has been very, very depressing, very, very difficult to be a Canucks fan at times. Frankly, it's looked like it's been very difficult to be a member of the Vancouver Canucks, mm-hmm. the way they played and the way they looked at times. And this season has been, for me, completely unexpected. I thought they might have a chance of making the playoffs, but I think we'd all, you know, I was, and I think most people were, they were like, well, maybe they can squeak into the wild card, because mm-hmm. you looked at the division and you went, beginning of the season, right? We didn't know how anything was going to work out with the Canucks. We knew Tocchet had come in here. We knew he was preaching pressure meets pressure, but we were all freaking out about the first few games and hoping sure. like that was our goal. Like, just don't bury yourself again. Just do not bury yourself. We weren't setting a goal of winning the division and even having a chance at winning the conference and being in the race for the President's Trophy the whole time. And we were looking at the division and we were going, okay, well, I mean, the Oilers are probably going to take one of the three spots. Vegas just won the Stanley Cup. They seem good. And LA just, you know, they've been there and they just added Dubois. Mm-hmm. So I think most of us were probably like, well, maybe the Central will be kind of weak and the Canucks will be able to sneak in there as a wild card. And, you know, I know the guys were at the intermission, Sat and IMAC and Murph were talking about they were giving words to describe the season, like one word to describe the season. And I can't remember all the words they came up with, but
a lot of R words.
Right. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, IMAX said that and he should have, but yeah, there are some R words. But if I was going to add mine, I'd add respect. Like, the Canucks brought respect back.
It's another R word.
To the team and the brand and the culture, you know, and I think, again, I don't want to speak for anyone, but for me, in the last few years, I did not have a lot of respect for the way the Canucks played. Yeah, they had some good individual performances. Yeah, once in a while you'd see the promise of the core, but they did not play a brand of hockey that garnered respect. Mm-hmm. And I think that's fair to say. They were not good defensively. They were not responsible. They were definitely not hard to play against. And I think that's changed this year. And you have to credit the new management group. You obviously have to credit the head coach and Rick Tocchet. But when all's said and done, yeah, you have to put the right people in charge. Right? That's obviously very important and it starts there. But the players have to do it. And the leadership group has to get everyone on board with it. And then they have to put the work in. Mm-hmm. And for the first time in a long time, yeah, we had the Bruce Boudreau era that, you know, Bruce, there it is. There was the bubble. But for the first time in a long, long time, you know, I mean, this might sound high and mighty media, but like, I respected the way the Canucks played.
Well, you know, you want to talk about respect, and it's an interesting one. I think there's a lot of validity to what you're saying here, but go back. I just went back and looked at the odds from a couple different sports books going back to the beginning of October. So right when the season started, and what the odds were just to win the Pacific Division, which the Canucks did last night with a 50-win campaign and cementing it with a win over, nonetheless, a Pacific Division rival in the Calgary Flames. The Canucks had the fifth longest odds out of any of the teams in the Pacific Division. So at the beginning of this year, odds makers had Edmonton, Vegas, Los Angeles, Calgary, and Seattle as more likely favorites to win the division than the Vancouver Canucks. It was the Vancouver Canucks, and then the real long shots, obviously, were San Jose and Anaheim, which mm-hmm. were much longer than the Canucks. But I still go back to that point. They were not getting a lot of respect from anybody right? Whether they respected themselves or not, or whether the local media respected them, the people that are paid to put together the odds on who's going to do this did not see much from this team. To do what they did is maybe one of the biggest surprises, if not the biggest surprises, in the NHL this season. And I know the regular season is not done. I know they still have a game left. And I know last night's game has a lot of talking points coming off of it. But I do think it's important to note that it was sort of a coronation last night because it was the final home game of the season. The team awards were given out. You kind of got the feeling that that was the end of the regular season right there.
And I think a lot of things came together for the team last night against the Calgary Flames. So let's talk about the game last night. The Canucks still don't know who they're going to meet in the first round. It's probably going to be Nashville, but there's also a chance it could be LA, or even a very small chance, I suppose, it could be Vegas. We'll know more tonight when Dallas hosts the St. Louis Blues. But, you know, and then that brings Thursday into discussion. What kind of lineup is Rick Tocchet going to bring to Winnipeg? You know, could they just send the Abbotsford Canucks? I don't know. They have an airport in Abbotsford, so they could just go Abbey to Winnipeg. What is it? What's the, you know, YVR? What is it? YXX? Is that Abbotsford?
I don't think it's YXX.
I think it might be. Anyway, we'll talk about this later. Back to last night's game.
Oh, my God, you're right.
Yeah, YXX.
YXX.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Sounds triple rated.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the most hardcore airport.
What's going down at that airport? It's
triple rated.
Yo, welcome to YXX.
Yeah.
It's
the most hardcore airport.
Welcome to YXX. You get punched in the face.
Yeah, that's right.
Back to last night's game. Lots to like in the opening period, really, as the Canucks jumped out to a 2-0 lead. The first goal came 12 minutes into the first. Tyler Myers scored shorthanded after taking really a smart, excellent cross-ice pass from Teddy Bluger. Is Myers playing his best hockey as a Canuck right now?
He's climbing the all-time leaders among defensemen with shorthanded goals in Canucks history. I think he's third now all-time.
That's a very...
Murph told him it after the game, and very Myers interesting was like, list. Cool.
Yeah, his game is just in a good and balanced spot right now. Seems like he's getting at least a couple of solid shots each game, and he really ripped that one past Markey. Vancouver's second goal was a beauty, and it was great to see, and we need to see more goals like it from that line. Petey makes a neat pass to Mikheyev in the neutral zone. Mikheyev turns on the afterburners, gains the zone, makes a great pass back to Petey, who, and this is the key part of this whole play, just very confidently slides it across to Höglander to bang it into the open net. A great play, really, from one end of the ice to the other, with the kind of deceptiveness that Petey can bring when he's confident and feeling it. I think that's it. I was trying to figure out a word. I'm like, it's not like fancy would be too lame word for it. But like he's when he's on his game, he's deceptive because he's not going to blow you away with his speed or his power. But he is going to do things out there that tricks the other team. And they're like, okay, well, Petey's probably going to shoot here. And he's like, no. Slides it across to Höglander. How many goals is that for Höglander? 24?
Yep.
My God. What a season he's having. Speaking of great seasons, the Canucks made it 3-0 in the second when Dakota Joshua got out on a 2-on-1 with Lindholm. And Dakota Joshua selfishly shot it past Markstrom. Poor Lindholm. He's like, give me the pass. I need it.
Okay.
Good for Joshua.
It was 18 on the year for Joshua.
18th goal of the season. And shout out again to Tyler Myers, who started the breakout by winning a battle in the corner and getting the puck going in the right direction. I told you his game was in a good spot right now. Very balanced.
Yes.
He's not having to play 21 minutes a night. So I think that probably helps as well. He was a second star last night. Thatcher Demko, of course, was the first star, and the Flames did spoil Demko's shutout in the third. But JT Miller, the MVP, the most exciting player, according to the fans, put the game away with his 37th of the season on really yet another sweet shot to beat Markey. Myers, Joshua, and Miller all beat Markey cleanly. The kids call it a snipe show.
Yeah, and that's
important. That's what it was last night. It was a snipe show at Rogers Arena.
Yes, I don't think the kids are saying that
very
anymore.
Very timely reference, snipes. But which is important, though.
Because and then they all had a celly.
Yeah, do kids still call them cellies? It's important that they were able to snipe it past Markstrom. And look, all joking aside, I don't think you're going to get those clean of looks in the playoffs, but this is a team that over the last few weeks we've talked about their inability to hit the net, their inability to finish at times. So it was nice to see on that front. There's two clips from Talk It that we want to play. The first is with regards to the line combinations. This has been a topic of conversation on the Halford and Bruff show for what feels like 2.5-3 months, but it's an important one because the Canucks now just have one regular season game remaining in Winnipeg on Thursday before they go to the playoffs. So Tuckett was asked, hey, are these lines that we're currently seeing, are they the ones that we're going to see in the playoffs? And this is what Rick Tuckett had to say post-game about his forward lines after the Calgary game going into the Winnipeg game on Thursday.
Talk to the group, talk to the trainers, see who's banged up. There's a lot of factors involved, and we can't make them in 5 minutes, but we're gonna have to do some research and figure the best way to handle this. But yeah, you always want to win every game, but there's precautionary things too.
I mean, that was the wrong clip, but that's fine. So that was the clip pertaining to what lineup is gonna play in Winnipeg.
Laddie always looks so aggrieved when he plays the wrong clip.
Well, he gives me an order at the start of the show.
Oh, it's his fault.
Deviates from the order.
It says in the text thread, this is the clip about the forward lines in brackets.
Yeah.
Parentheses, they call them sometimes. But that doesn't matter. So the lineup...
Don't blame others. Just we're holding you accountable. We've got a culture here. There's been a culture change here at Sportsnet 650.
Need more of a culture change.
We're going to... All right. Some guys have to leave. Some guys have to go.
You know what we're going to do? We're going to right our wrongs. We're going to play the Talk It clip now about the forward lines as it pertains to what happened last night in Calgary and what the forward lines will look like going into the playoffs.
Probably not. I mean, maybe a tweak here and there, but this is where we're going with. We've had enough times of experimenting and trying to figure a few things out, but I think this is where we're going to go with. Maybe there might be a switch here and there, don't get me wrong, but so far, I think we're going to stick with this way.
So I think this is something that we talked about yesterday.
I like it.
Yeah, yeah. It's the right move.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, far be it
spread
from,
it out.
Far be it for me, an armchair analyst, to give my nod of approval, be like, you guys can do this now. Please go ahead. But
Tuckett was kind of saying, like, he was like, I reserve the right to make changes. I'm like, yep, you're the coach.
But he didn't even say that. He just said there might be little tweaks. Like, I think this is how. Maybe he didn't necessarily envision it going, because I don't think that the Lindholm thing has worked out like gangbusters.
I think it is.
I don't know.
Well,
I don't know. I think in a dream world, dream scenario is Lindholm bolsters your top six.
Yeah, that's
doesn't
true.
Replace Bluger as your 3C because Bluger was fine. Because
that's where he started. Lindholm started, right?
I think the idea was he's a Swiss Army knife or a Swedish Army knife, I suppose, and he's going to be able to do a variety of different things in our top six. We can bounce him out to the wing. We can play him with Petey. Have the Trey Kroner line with him and Petey and Hoaglander, and none of it worked. So this is a 1B or a 2A where it's like, okay, well, this still gives us great depth down the middle, right? If you're going to go Pettersson, Miller, Lindholm, there's a lot of teams, including the Nashville Predators, that would be clamoring for that kind of depth down the middle.
Even the fourth line. Well, you got two centers down there with Lafferty and Teddy Bluger and Vasily Podkolzin. Listen, it's not perfect, and you'd like to see a little bit more scoring, for example, from Ilya Mikheyev on that line, but he did make a nice play. Thought he played well last night. He made a nice play on the Hoaglander goal. He was very active on that goal. So it's not perfect overall, but I got to say that I couldn't feel much better about the Canucks and the way the lineup looks heading into the playoffs. I mean,
they're healthy.
Listen, like they're Kemp healthy.
Goes back.
They're
line
healthy.
Seem balanced.
I like that Garland and Joshua are on a separate line from Miller and Pettersson. It might have been okay for a bit, but I think if you have that line of Lindholm, Garland, and Joshua performing well at 5-on-5, and also, two of those guys are going to be a pretty big part of the penalty kill with Lindholm and Joshua, and then you get more plays like that Pettersson line had last night. It doesn't even have to be, throughout the game you're making those spectacular plays, but you have to take advantage of the skill on that line, and you have to score goals that skilled players can score. Mm-hmm. And that was a perfect example. JT Miller, like last night for me, it was kind of like a microcosm of the Canucks season, because they got scoring from the guys that they expect to get scoring from, a guy like JT Miller, and then they also got scoring from a defenseman. Like, their defenseman scoring has been way up this year. Mm-hmm. Tyler Myers scores, Dakota Joshua scores, and they get a good defensive performance once again, and really, you know, actually, like, I know Calgary had the score effects push at the end, but I thought they were pretty good defensively. And then when they weren't, Thatcher Demko was there for you. Like, okay. You have to be feeling good about this team right now.
So there is still one game remaining in the regular season, and a lot of people are texting into the Dunbar Lumber text line at 650-650, including all of our longshoremen currently waiting on Franklin Street for their shift to begin. They want to know the future, meaning who are the Canucks going to play and what is at stake in this final game in Winnipeg. So, Greg, let's try this again. Let's play the clip about what Tocchet plans to do lineup-wise going into Thursday's regular season finale in Winnipeg against the Jets.
Talk to the group, talk to the trainers, see who's banged up. There's a lot of factors involved, and we can't make them in 5 minutes, but we're going to have to do some research and figure the best way to handle this. But, yeah. You know, you always want to win every game, but there's precautionary things too.
You always want to win every game, but there's precautionary things too. Translation: I'm not giving you guys anything. Please let me go home. That was Rick Tocchet's basis. That was the explanation. The Canucks are currently set to face the Nashville Predators. If they finish atop the Pacific Division, which they have already clinched, and they finish second in the Western Conference. And for that to happen, Dallas would need to get just a single solitary point against St. Louis tonight. Then the Canucks would face Nashville. But, as you mentioned earlier, there's still the very finite possibility that they could play LA or they could play the Vegas Golden Knights, right? There's a variety of things that could still happen. Right now, it's most likely that they'll play Nashville, but we can't pencil any of that in yet because, as we saw last night in the Eastern Conference, things can kind of change pretty quick. Now, as it pertains to the Vancouver Canucks lineup, they don't have the cap space or the recalls left to do what you were suggesting about flying the entire Abbotsford Canucks team to Winnipeg. Yeah, they can't do it.
I was wondering how Tristan Nielsen would match up against Scheifele.
You're going to have to keep wondering because Tristan Nielsen will not be on that trip to Winnipeg. As Satin Dan explained in the post-game show following last night's 4-1 win over Calgary, there's basically four guys that they can rest from the active roster, and that's it. Because I don't know
better if you saw- be one of them better be Quinn Hughes,
right?
And JT Miller. I don't even want Quinn Hughes thinking about going away. I don't want him leaving his house.
Don't go to the airport
until the playoffs start. I will allow him to go to practice,
even that.
But if you go to Winnipeg, like, they've got those big mosquitoes there.
It's true.
He could get bitten.
Yep. You don't want him to go. He could get malaria. That's how you get him. It's from mosquitoes. And,
you got to think his mood is pretty high right now. You put him in Winnipeg, maybe that mood just, goes right down.
It's true. Although, I do wonder if his mood was sullied yesterday because he didn't get team MVP.
Can you imagine?
Could you imagine?
If this tears apart the Vancouver Canucks season.
Him and Miller just aren't speaking anymore.
Yeah, and Quinn Hughes is like, wow, I thought you were a little more selfless than that.
We do need to talk about this very briefly, as the Canucks did give out their team awards last night. So JT Miller got the haul. He won team MVP and most exciting player. Now, a reminder, these are voted on by fans.
Right.
But I don't know if that's a bigger slap in the face. It remains to be seen.
I think it's more a positive for what JT Miller has done this season.
Quinn Hughes did win best defenseman. So good on the voters for getting that one right.
Imagine you didn't win that one.
Yeah, but I was actually... I
mean, the only season the Canucks have a Norris Trophy winning defenseman, and they're like, yeah, I don't know if he's the MVP, though.
For the first time in a long time, I was actually surprised by the team awards because I just assumed that Quinn Hughes was going to win MVP. Mm. But JT Miller got it. Now, again, if it's not...
JT Miller's the people's hero, man.
If it's not abundantly clear, I'm doing
he's
all
this... He's a populist leader.
I'm trying to do this very tongue-in-cheek. And some people, that's just going to sail right over your head, and that's... That's on me. That is on me. But JT Miller wins MVP and most exciting. Quinn Hughes wins best D-man. I have issue with Dakota Joshua winning the Unsung Hero Award for the second consecutive year.
Yeah, he's quite sung at this point.
if you win an award, I think you are thereby sung. Now, I know Yannick Hansen won the Unsung Hero Award 3 times, so there's a precedence here, but now there's a bigger thing at stake here.
I think they should hold this over him during contract negotiations and just be like, listen, they say you're the unsung hero here. Would an unsung hero go for maximum amount of money in a contract negotiation, or would he be more of a team guy?
Are you going to be an unsung hero?
Oh, is it about you now? Is it about you, Dakota Joshua, now?
Why don't you act like an unsung hero?
Yeah.
Here's $2 million.
You're listening to the best of Halford and Brough. You're listening to the best of Halford and Brough.
One on a Wednesday. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Alfred Brough, Sportsnet 650. Alfred Brough, the morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. We are in hour two of the program. Luke Gazdick, former NHLer, now NHL analyst of Sportsnet, is going to join us in just a moment here to kick off hour two. Hour two is brought to you by Primetime Craft Beer. Meticulously brewed for quality and taste, Primetime is full flavor without compromise. You can get some at a liquor store near you, or you can visit the brewery and see how it's made.
We are coming to you live from the Kintech studio, Kintech Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sorfie, what are you waiting for?
Kintech, to the phone lines we go. It's time now for Luke Gazdick here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Morning, Luke. How are you?
Good morning, guys. Good. Congratulations to you guys this morning.
Oh, thanks. We put a lot of hard work in. Talk has been a great coach for us, and we're just happy to enjoy the Pacific Division crown. But we put the work in. We put the work in, true. And that's the most important thing. Luke, let's talk about that. How remarkable is it what Rick Tocchet and this Canucks team has done based on preseason expectations?
Honestly, it's unbelievable. Out of any team in the league, for me, they've definitely been one of the most fun to cover. But in terms of improvement, and Murph called it refreshing last night on the broadcast, and I think that was a good way to put it. Just because of everything they've been through the last couple of years, the coaching carousel, the turnover on the roster, the injuries, not having Demko for a large part of last year. Everything has just kind of seemed to click this year. And not only that, but it just seems like the culture's changed. It was interesting watching that game last night against the young Calgary team that reminded me of Vancouver from maybe, call it a couple of years ago, and now talking about, looking at the big picture and future going forward. And from start to finish, Vancouver just ran their show last night. And this is a team that, I'm not going to lie, guys, like, I expected a drop-off at some point. Maybe not a drastic one, but consistently have just been there from start to finish. And, like I said, the culture that Talk and the top guys on the team have kind of provided with the locker room and the way they go about playing the game and the job that Quinn Hughes has done, and just even individual milestones and bounce back years for guys. It has been a heck of a year for the Canucks.
I'm thinking about teams like Ottawa and Buffalo and how they must be looking at the Canucks and going, we're in similar situations. We've got some talent. We just can't seem to pull it together. We seem to have a culture problem. And I just wonder if one of Rick Tocchet's closest friends, Craig Berube, is going to get the job in Buffalo or Ottawa. What do you think about that?
Yeah, Jamal Mayers yesterday, I worked with him on the panel, and he was big on that for having Chief go into Buffalo. And I think that's such an interesting coaching job out there. I think it has to be one of the most, I don't want to say tempting, but the young core of players that they have, especially on the blue line. I think they do need a veteran guy that can come in and shake up the culture, set the tone of the dressing room. I thought that was pretty telling when Casey Mittelstadt gets traded to Colorado and the first thing he says is, wow, they practice hard here, or practice is a lot faster here. I mean, that tells you something, right? And Jamal made sure to mention that Tony Granato is a good hockey man and a very smart hockey guy, just probably not the right guy for that team. But they need someone like that in there, some sort of veteran guy that's been there before, has won before, has played the game before, and somebody that a lot of the younger players in that locker room can really buy into.
Do most of the young players want a strong voice as a coach, whether they know it or not?
Man, that's a great question, because at the end of my career, I was playing in the minors in San Diego, and the average age on our team was 21 and a half. And I will tell you that a lot of the younger players just kind of like to do their own thing. They have a bit of a chip on their shoulder when they come into pro hockey now, where it's not as much earned. It's, I would just say it's expected that it's given. Not every player has that attitude, but I would say a fair amount do. And you have to have a coach that kind of finds that fine line where it's not just yelling and screaming in your ear. It's motivating and it's teaching and it's coaching. You know, talk about video meetings and stuff like that. It's not blowing guys up and ISOing guys and showing them all their mistakes and screaming and yelling. Like I said, it's finding that line where you can get in a guy's head and motivate him, but also be pretty stern about it and, you know, set a standard. And it's not an easy thing to do with today's culture. Dallas Eakins was there the year before in San Diego, and he put it perfectly for me. We were having a sit down one day, and he said, instead of coaching a team these days, he feels like he's coaching 23 individuals. He kind of has to micromanage the personalities that he has in the locker room. And they can be tough, but as soon as you get them on your side, I don't want to say it's game over, but it's a great thing because you can kind of get everyone involved. But I will tell you, the young guys, they do come in with a little bit of a chip on their shoulder. And I'd say that's one of the hardest things is to get them to buy in.
Now, I know the answer to this question, but I want to ask it anyway. How important is it for a coach to have a leadership group of players that is on board with the coach and willing to pass on the message down to the rest of the players?
It is everything. It is everything, because those guys, those young players, first and foremost, will go to the veterans first, especially if something wrong happens to them. You know what I mean? Like if they make a mistake and coach calls them out, like I said, they will go to a guy like me and be like, hey, like, you know, what's he talking about there? Like, I didn't do anything wrong. And then it's me who has to find that middle ground. It was a very similar situation in Calgary, I thought, when Ryan Huska got hired, because I played for Ryan in the minors in Stockton. And one of the big things I said about Husk is he needs to get those vets on board early. The Backlunds and Uyghurs and, you know, Kadri, Huberto, because as soon as he gets those guys to buy in, the young guys will follow and you'll have an entire team that's kind of growing together. There can't be a split. There can't be any clicks, but it is honestly everything is getting those veteran guys and the guys with some experience that the younger guys lean on, getting them on board early is massive.
Speaking of a young new coach getting the old guys to fall in line, how much kudos do you give Spencer Carberry, a guy we've talked about quite? I think it's the first time we talked about him all year. Spencer Carberry, the job that he did getting the Washington Capitals somehow into the playoffs.
I mean, it's unbelievable. I'm still trying to figure out how it happens.
Same.
I was prepping for the show yesterday, and I'm thinking, Charlie Lindgren's been unbelievable lately. So I start digging into it, and he really hadn't even been that good. Like, they won a couple games that they really needed to win. I think the running joke going now is the goal differential. But that is about as accurate as it gets when you're talking about getting the vets to buy in early. Ovechkin, Carlson, even Kemper and Nett, getting those guys on board so that Hendricks Lapierre and Connor McMichael and these guys will all follow. It's pretty special. And I have a lot of respect for Spence. He started in the East Coast, worked his way up to the American League. He's won in a lot of places and put in the work and put in the hours. It's a young guy that I think has a great future in the game. And you know what? It's not a very exciting brand of hockey or an exciting team to watch, but all the kudos in the world to Spencer Carberry for getting them in the place that they have. Because I think a large part of that success is due to him behind the bench.
We talked about this with Jeff Merrick, but the Leafs and the Bruins are going to play yet again. And for the most part, it has not gone well for the Leafs against the Bruins. But the Bruins are not quite the same Bruins team they were before. They don't have Patrice Bergeron. They don't have Zdeno Chara anymore. They do have some pretty good players, but do you think this is more an opportunity for the Leafs to face the Bruins, or do you think this is yet another moment where the Bruins could potentially embarrass the Leafs?
I mean, I know it's kind of be careful what you wish for, but I actually like the Boston matchup better than I did Florida, kind of prepping for this and watching the scenarios play out as they did. I just think if there's any year that Toronto can get it done with the roster that they have, it's this year. Boston, two extremely capable goaltenders, very, very good, both of them. They have 12 forwards that work and compete. It's their defense core where I see Toronto potentially exposing them a little bit. They play hard, but I just think Toronto's core and the ability that they have offensively can do some damage there. What Boston has for them is the culture as well, and it's just the way they play. It's one of those teams where I might have talked to you guys about this earlier in the year, but when you watch Boston play, they are about the definition of they play the right way. You'll hear that cliche a lot, and it's not a lot of big mistakes. They don't give you anything out there. It's a bit of a passive 1-2-2 where they're always on top of you. So as soon as you get the puck, someone's checking you, and you don't have a lot of time and space to make plays. And that can be extremely frustrating over probably a 7-game series here. But I just love the Leafs' pushback this year. This is one of the rosters that I've liked the most in the last probably couple of years. And if there's any year they're going to do it, I think it's this year. They need one of their goaltenders, looks like Samsonov, to step up and make some saves. And I think this thing goes 7.
Do you think that's what the Oilers need? They need that ability to avoid the big mistake?
That is one of their crucial flaws. It's really slow starts. It's big mistakes at big moments in the game, and it's little things early like that. Generally, the things for the Oilers happen early in games because they get better and better as it goes on. They have the best third period goal differential in hockey. They kind of slow play it in there. But, I mean, if you're going to play Vegas in the first round, you want to spot them a 2-0 lead every game. Have fun winning that. It's just not going to happen. I just find with I don't want to say a couple of their defensemen, but it does happen where it's going good and they'll just be just a costly mistake. And give them credit, they've gotten better at it. I think Knobloch's done a great job, and so has Paul Coffey on the back end of eliminating a lot of that. But they tend to dip just a little bit here and there.
The Nashville Predators, I want to get your take on them because I think most Canucks fans are, if it is indeed the Predators that the Canucks face, there's still a chance they could play Vegas or LA, but it's most likely going to be Nashville. I don't know if a lot of Canucks fans have put a lot of thought into the Predators and looked at them too much. I mean, based on arena availability, I don't even know if the Predators expected to make the playoffs because they've booked a lot of stuff for this time of the year. What is it about this team that's made them such a surprise in a good way for Nashville?
I think they're just well-structured. I think one thing that I love is the veterans they added in. There were some question marks and some people raising their eyebrows when they went out and signed Ryan O'Reilly and Luke Shen this summer. And I just remember thinking, those are two great moves. Bring in two guys in your locker room that have won, that have that experience. I've played with both of them. If I'm starting a team, those are two guys right at the top of the list that I want in there. But they also just have this belief system where I think they believe in what they're doing. It seems to me that they really like Andrew Brunette, and he, much like Kok, has established a great culture there. And when you have a goalie like UC Saros, who's going to give you a chance to win every night, that's a really good feeling. And he does that. He is perennially, including this year, one of the top guys in the league in terms of any goaltending stat. And if you have a guy like that in your net, that gives you a huge confidence boost. They worked a lot off momentum this year, but that 18 game point streak that they put together this year is maybe the most impressive thing out of the NHL season this year. Like, out of anything that's happened, including individual milestones, getting points in 18 straight and at that point in the year is incredible. And I still kind of look up and down their roster and think how they did it. Because if you look at the Canucks back-to-back with them, I like Vancouver's roster a lot better. But culture, belief, some veterans, and a good goaltender can take you pretty far.
Which pairing would you take? Quinn Hughes and Filip Hronek, or Ryan McDonagh and Roman Josi?
Oh, as soon as you said which pair, I knew you were going Josi. I'll probably go Hughes and Hronek still, just because I like Hronek better than McDonagh. And McDonagh's, you know, great, good skater, good veteran guy, blocks a ton of shots. But, I mean, you guys know, if you watch Vancouver hockey this year, those two don't have to defend a lot. They have this kind of synchronicity where they know where each other is. And Quinn's just, he's taken another step this year for me. I know Josi is outstanding at what he does and had a tremendous back half. He's one of, if not the best defenders in hockey, but Quinn has just been such a nice surprise. I don't want to say surprise, but such a fun player to watch this year on both ends of the puck. He has clearly taken a step forward in wanting to improve his defensive game, takes a lot of pride in it. And getting that captaincy, I think, really forced him to take a lot of the weight of that team on his shoulders. And it seems like he just relished that opportunity. He's been unreal this year. He's my vote for Norris. I expect that with a lot of others, but he wins that question for me in the either or, just because of what he's been able to accomplish this year.
Okay, let's throw another either-or at you. It's Luke Gazdick here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. You're a NHL team, and you have some say in who you get to play in the first round. Who do you want to face, the Nashville Predators, Los Angeles Kings, or the Vegas Golden Knights?
I mean, it's probably Nashville. In saying that and pumping them up, it's probably Nashville. LA, we talked about last week, about how they can bore you to death. They can play defensive, but also score. And I just don't have a great feeling about them. And then Vegas is just Vegas.
Yeah.
This is, it's looking like Edmonton's going to have to play them in the first round, which is a nightmare series to off the bat. But just in terms of, you know, body of work, I'll say Nashville. I just think they're the most susceptible, but I could say LA for that too, just because of the goaltending. Saros could steal them a series by himself. And I just don't think you can say the same on the LA side.
I bring this up because there is a scenario, a very, very real and possible scenario, where the Canucks do kind of get to dictate where they want to finish. Right now, I know you can't juke the standings or juke games, but there's games that you go into and like, we're going to win this game. And then there's other games where you go into and we're like, if we don't win, it's not the worst thing on the planet. Now, I don't know how to do this. I'm not an NHL coach, but I assume it has, you know, like potential lineup decisions and maybe putting the backup or the third string goalie in as opposed to the starter.
Shooting it in your own net.
I mean, those are options that are available to you as a professional, but I mean, you've played in the NHL close to 200 games. Like, nobody goes out and consciously tries to lose, but there are decisions that you can make that could maybe shade that way or another. You understand what I'm getting at here with the Canucks. Like, they could go into that game in Winnipeg and have a lot of very interesting decisions on their hands.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it's just like tanking, right, for the teams at the bottom. They're not deliberately tanking. They're not deliberately throwing games. But if you call up half your American League team and start them every night and you look like the San Jose Sharks, you are going to lose every game. I thought it was interesting. I was just hearing kind of some debate on whether you start Demko or not. I think that decision's up to him. I look at a situation like last night, and Boston's kind of in the same position. They lost to Washington the night before. They're playing against Ottawa. They're getting absolutely manhandled. And they go out in the third period and put up 23 shots and put up a real fight. I just think there's so much competitive nature for guys that, yeah, you might have that mindset going in where it's like, you know, we're not necessarily going to throw it, but I don't not too mad if we lose. But then if you're losing after a certain amount of time, it's just guys are so competitive that after a certain amount of that lopsidedness, I guess I'll say, it's tough to just kind of let it stand by. But I understand the situation that they're in now and that there is a very, very more favorable matchup for them. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see which way they go. I would fully expect Demko to start, but also not surprised if he doesn't and they go with Casey or Silovs.
Okay, I'm glad that you're explaining this the way that you are, because I think some fans and listeners, whatever, have this very naive thought that, you know, guys are actually either told or it's understood to go and lose. Like, it never happens because it's almost impossible to try and dictate it. Like, you'd have to choreograph a loss and you can't do it. And the other part of it is that you can't really regulate the emotions of guys. Like, you mentioned that Bruins game last night, and Bruff and I were texting back and forth about it. Like, they were clearly like, okay, this is enough. This is Ottawa. These guys stink and they're not in the playoffs and we have pride on the line.
So I think playing at home was a factor though for the Bruins, right? Like, the Bruins crowd.
Yeah.
Like, you don't want to like put up a stinker against a Bruins crowd or you might not get out of there.
Right. And like,
yeah, you can't lose on fan appreciation night for the Ottawa
but see, the Canucks are going into Winnipeg on fan appreciation night. So they could
just
sit back.
That's the thing for me is you want to go into the playoffs feeling good too. If you walk into to Winnipeg and beat the Jets in their own building the game before the playoffs start, you're feeling good. And I think that's the biggest thing is don't worry about anybody else. Don't look across the standings and the scoreboards and look at all these different scenarios of what's going to happen. You're going to have to play a couple of these teams anyway. Just worry about yourselves and worry about what's going on in this locker room. I think it's huge for them to go in feeling good. They got a great win last night at home. Go beat the Jets on the road and go into the playoffs feeling as good as possible.
Luke, this was awesome as always, and we're very excited to announce that throughout these Stanley Cup playoffs, you're going to be a weekly regular on this show. Every Friday, it's the Luke Gazdick Show. We're renaming it just for Fridays.
I love it, boys. I'm looking forward to it, too.
Yeah, us too. Thanks, Luke. We appreciate it.
Have a good day, guys.
You too. Thanks. That's Luke Gazdick, former NHLer, now in a Sportsnet NHL analyst and Halford and Brough Show regular, which I'm sure is going to be first on his resume moving forward.
Fiesta Fridays with Luke Gazdick. Welcome to the party.
What, like the symmetry, right? Mm-hmm. Luke.
So what do our Fridays look like right now?
Luke Gazdick.
Mm-hmm.
Fiesta Fridays.
Rick Dollywell.
Ask us anything.
Oh, my AJ. God.
AJ's Pizza.
Yeah. I'm really excited to talk to AJ this week, by the way.
Oh.
About Guzman?
About Guzman's return.
We made fun of him about that, too. We're like, it's not even close, really.
The Yankees are riding such a high when we talked to him last week. And then
Jays won again last night.
They did.
It's actually on the TV.
Kikuchi.
It's on the TV right now. The score is 5-1 in the bottom of the sixth as I watch Jays in 30. What was the final?
5-4.
Ooh.
They did a little comeback. Romano had a bit of an issue in the ninth.
They had a couple hiccups for Jordy.
They threw him right into the fire.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Laddie, do you think Demko is going to play Thursday in Winnipeg, regardless of what happens, you know, tonight between Dallas and St. Louis or whatever is going on with the division? Do you think he will? Do you think he should play? Or did you see enough from him last night against the Calgary Flames to be like, all right, you're ready to roll?
I wouldn't be surprised if he sat for the last game just for injury. They don't want him to get injured or re-aggravate something before the playoffs. I could see that as the reason why. And
can you imagine if that happened?
Oh, that's anytime you play anytime you lace him up, you're adding potential risk, right? So I think they definitely are thinking about resting him.
It doesn't sound like, you know, Rick Tocchet didn't say what he was going to do for Winnipeg, but when he says, I need to consult with the trainers, that means that he's not putting a ton of emphasis on this game. He's really not, because, you know, if it was an important game, he'd be like, the only reason I need to consult with the trainers is to make sure that they have all the medications that they need to give the players to get them out on the ice, right? Like, he's thinking about resting guys. He's definitely thinking about resting guys. Any guys with bumps or bruises, you know, we learned yesterday, and this is something I heard too, that the playoffs might start on Sunday.
everyone would have been talking about, okay, well, maybe it's going to be Tuesday, and that's going to be a big break, and you're going to get a lot of rest, and the Preds especially are going to be rested. But the Canucks, if they have any banged up guys, you know, they'll finish their season Thursday, and then they won't play until Tuesday. So that's a long time. Kind of changes the equation a little bit if you play on Sunday. Then you're talking about, okay, Thursday, then you'd only have Friday and Saturday to get any rest, and then you're right into the playoffs. Like, that's a two-day difference. So I think rest becomes even more important for any guys that are potentially banged up if the playoffs are going to start Sunday and not Tuesday.
You're listening to the best of Halford and Brough.